When we don't do a PDP for 2 weeks, for whatever reason, it feels like we have not done a show for a year and a half.
A lot happens, man.
It's so weird. And really nothing happened. You know.
Yeah. I mean.
Not really anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's Colorado, you know, Rockies. Like I tweeted out yesterday from the account, the Rockies aren't doing much, obviously, on the field. They're not winning a lot of games. They're losing more games than they do. But they have been a lot of fun for, like, weird and useless baseball stats.
Yeah, I like how you tagged them in that one. That was funny. Because I'm sure that they were like, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a lot, jerk.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's
no.
Like these guys.
You've been on a roll with weird and useless Rockies stats lately.
It's been fun, man. Especially with Cargo and Nolan doing what they're doing. They've been a two-man wrecking crew, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been fun to watch what they've been doing.
They are very good at baseball. Have you
noticed Justin
that?
Miller? Justin Miller, 7 consecutive strikeouts.
Yeah. And he favorited and retweeted PDP tweet. A whole bunch of tweets from people who like Justin Miller.
And you know, and considering how famous we are now,
obviously,
we even got name dropped by Drew Goodman on
sort of
what Rockies broadcast, kind of, called us the Purple Dino Podcast.
Yeah. That's something.
Hey.
You know, why not?
One step at a time. That's all I got to say.
You know, eventually when we're taking over the media in this town.
What? Oh, God.
Yesterday, I was watching the local news. I don't have cable anymore, so I just watch, you know, like either the networks, if there is ever anything on the networks, which there is not, unless it's a live sporting event, or now The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. So I was watching yesterday and, well, first of all, I was watching 9 News until they said, 9 News Sports with Drew, and then I changed the channel. And, so then I went over to a different network and, just the fluff pieces about the Denver Broncos, man. They are spectacular. I mean, like, the Broncos were my first love in life. We've had this conversation a lot. Like, it was my parents and then the Broncos. Not even my sister. Like, she was probably after them. But, like, you grow up.
I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah, probably. They care. You grow up and, like, you know, you work around sports for a while. And I worked in the NFL for a couple of years when I first got out of college. I worked for a station that covered the Broncos. And, man, it's just it's pretty easy to dislike the NFL and the machine that is the NFL. So then when you just watch the way that they're just like, just the plaudits, the overall just glowing praise that they get for absolutely everything, it's just so amusing. It's just the only Rocky stories that get covered are, well, the Rockies suck. Look at what they're doing with John Gray. They suck at this. They suck at that. They suck. Why are they playing? Even one of the – Vic Lombardi is one of the best guys in all of in Denver sports media my entire life. Yesterday, he's taking a shot at how there's nobody at the Padres game. It was a rainout game. It was a makeup, man.
Yeah.
Plus, they're a bad team. Like, they're bad teams. You think if the Broncos were as bad as the Padres were, that people would just keep shelling out $80 a game? Come on.
So, I was there on, this would have been Wednesday, I guess,
yep,
for the 6 o'clock game. And I tweeted out the picture about 10 minutes before first pitch, and there was nobody in the stadium. I was like, oh, Padres fans really showing up, blah, blah, blah. By, like, the third inning, the lower bowl was completely full, which I was surprised about, considering it's two crappy teams, you know, going off into the, you know, endless nothingness of the 2015 season. But there was nobody in the upper deck at all, around the ballpark at all, but the lower bowl was completely filled. So I was like, well, at least that's something, you know? Like, they're at least getting people there. The people were excited about the Padres for once this year coming into the season, and they really just ran that goodwill straight into the ground.
If you're AJ Preller, I mean, what do you think about yourself these days? Like, when you look out on an empty ballpark and a team that's going to finish, you know, third or fourth place in the division, what do you think of yourself? What do you think of what you did? Do you think that this is still – because it's not like this is some big Astros-like rebuild where it was like, okay, we know that this is a big, bold decision that we're taking, but eventually it's going to pay off. This is a win-now move in a sport that does not lend itself to these types of moves, and it failed spectacularly. Like, what do you think you think about yourself if you're somebody like that?
Yeah, it was not a methodical approach.
No.
It was not well thought out. It was making moves for the sake of making moves and getting talent. Even though maybe
it wasn't
the right talent.
Really fit. Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't the right talent for your ball club at that time.
Right.
And I understand wanting to make moves and, you know, make splashes because, man, the Padres had not made a splash in a long, long time. And to their credit, that's all they did this offseason. Everything was about the Padres. Now the Padres are restocking and the Padres making this deal and Padres making that deal.
Yeah.
So you have to appreciate the fact that he wanted to do something, but it wasn't really the right thing for that team, clearly.
Not at all. They are not a good team. That is
two not very good teams.
We didn't even do like an intro to this show. Welcome in. This is episode number 59 of the Purple Dinosaur podcast. This is a San Diego Padres podcast in which we talk all things AJ Preller and Ted Leitner on this show. No, it's episode number 59 of the PDP. And Anthony, who do we have as contenders for the naming rights honor of episode number 59?
Wouldn't you like to know,
I
would. Tyler? I mean, we're kind of running out of numbers here.
I know. We're getting so close to the end.
We're getting to a point where we're going to have to start making it up for a couple of times. And we've had some good good suggestions.
Yeah, mathematical formulas.
Get some formulas, get some other stuff in there, and get, like, you know, big stats in Rocky's history.
Right.
Something that has happened there.
Which is, you know, we got a guy who can do that.
Who?
Well, it's not me.
Are we hiring somebody?
James Smythe.
Oh, yeah. James is great. So we've got five options for number 59. And there, it's a bunch of winners, too.
Aren't they all?
Oh, man. Well, we got everybody's favorite reliever. So if I told you Rockies fans' favorite reliever of all time, and by favorite, I obviously mean the opposite of that, who would you think it was?
That's a really good question, actually, because there have been so many bad ones.
Yes.
I mean, it would have to boil down to a couple of guys for me. I would say, like, historically, if you look back, people really hated Sean Chacon at a time.
Right.
People hated there were some guys in those, like, weird random, like, mid-2000s teams. But nobody – there's those are 1A, but Wilton Lopez is obviously number one.
Wilton Lopez
might be the most hated Rocky period of all
time.
Wilton
Lopez is number one. He lost person to wear number 59 for 2013 and 2014. So he is he's on the short list right now. Other person to wear it, Carlos Torres in 2012, Clayton Mortensen in 2011 – Chris Gisselle, I don't know,
sure.
In 2004, and Todd Jones in 2002, 2003. Todd Jones, best known for having a phenomenal mustache throughout his playing career.
Todd Jones looked like he was going to be a very shrewd pickup for the Rockies at one time, and to be fair, was not like a dumpster fire his first year in Colorado, but he was just 2 years removed from an all-star season with the Detroit Tigers in 2000. He saved 42 games that year, posted an ERA of 3.52 in 67 appearcises.
He was fifth in the Cy Young voting.
Yeah, what? How in the hell did that happen?
3.52 ERA.
Struck out 54 in 68 innings. 29 walks. What? I'm so confused.
That's so weird.
Huh. But anyway, the Rockies got him in 2002. It wasn't terrible. I mean, it wasn't good. 1-4 record, a 4.70 ERA. Then the next year, 33 appearances for the Rockies, 1-4, 8.24. And yet he somehow played five more years after that.
Yeah, and posted a couple of really nice ERAs, some good FIPs. His year in 2005, 68 games for the Marlins, had a 2.10 ERA, a 2.38 FIP. Even for Boston after he left the Rockies that year, his ERA was 5.52 for the Red Sox, but his fielding independent pitching was 3.13.
So
baseball's
weird,
man. He eventually was 40.
Fifth in the All-Star vote, or in the Cy Young voting in 2000. What?
Was that the year Bartolo Colon won?
That was
Pedro won that year.
Pedro won
1-05, sorry.
Tim Hudson finished second. David Wells finished third. David Wells of the Blue Jays. Andy Pettit finished fourth. Todd Jones
so random
finished fifth.
And
of Roger Clemens
and Mike Mussina. Pedro got 100% of the first place vote, by the way, that year. That was like peak Pedro.
How weird.
The 99-01 Pedro was peak Pedro.
Yeah, that's true.
Three of the best combined years in the history of baseball.
Pedro that year, 18-6, 1.74 ERA, 284 strikeouts to 32 walks in 217 innings, and a whip of 0.737.
That's amazing.
Good God, Pedro. Ugh.
I love 99, by the way. You look at Pedro, won the Cy Young that year, too. Had a 23-4 record, a 2.07 ERA. So his ERA was 2.07. His FIP was 1.39.
Good Lord.
So what Pedro couldn't control, basically his ERA was 1.39. He had 313 strikeouts and 37 walks in 213 and a third innings.
Is that good?
That's unreal.
Pedro's one of those guys, we had this discussion a couple weeks ago, who, like, I couldn't stand when he was playing because I was, like, an angsty teenager. And now I'm, like, so mad at myself for not just appreciating Pedro while he was playing.
Yeah.
Because, man, he was unbelievable. And he's so fun. He's so hilarious now.
And he is giving Nolan Arenado a lot of praise on Twitter recently.
Big fan.
I mean, he tweeted out yesterday.
Pedro randomly loves the Rockies. Pedro's always tweeting good stuff
about the Rockies.
Nolan,
so
weird.
He loves Nolan, which you got to appreciate.
Which who doesn't?
Yes, obviously. And we'll talk about Nolan in a second here. But Pedro tweeted out yesterday, "In my heart, Nolan Arenado should be the NL MVP. He is hitting everywhere, not only at home, but on the road and playing great defense."
That's a... It's a hell of a nice praise for a kid who is really just at the start of what he's going to do in his career. I don't think he's the MVP this year, but it's a cool thing to see.
I mean, if you wanted to do it by, you know,
basically
straight numbers,
any metric,
it's going to be Bryce Harper.
Right, right.
But Nolan Arenado is putting up a phenomenal season. The only
Nolan should definitely get some votes in there.
Of course. Oh, I'm sure he'll be, well, I guess he could be top five. I'm sure you'll see like guys like Greinke and Arrieta put before him. But I think people around the game are starting to really realize just how good this kid is. Let's just kick into this right now. Yeah, this is a good segue here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I work on MLB Whip Around on Fox Sports 1. Actually, just FS1 now. We get in trouble if we say Fox Sports 1 now.
Oh, really?
We have officially rebranded to FS1.
Wow.
Which was so much easier because we all said FS1 at the beginning, but they were like, no, we're actually Fox Sports 1. Don't call us that. So,
see,
like,
now I am weird enough that I will have to say FS1
I know.
When I tell people what you do.
Yes. Yeah, because Rupert will find you. And
yeah,
he probably will
because he's a lunatic.
Yes. No, I didn't say that, Uncle Rupee. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
I did. I got it.
So, and I work with a lot of, you know, former baseball players who maybe haven't been in the game for, you know, 10 years or so. I work with a lot of analysts who, you know, guys like Kevin Burkhardt, Chris Myers, who are, you know, your basic studio guys, Ryan Field. But then you got, you know, your guys like Frank Thomas, even Pete Rose going way back, and then like CJ Nitkowski, Dontrelle Willis. But you talk to these guys right now in the MVP discussion, and, you know, they say, of course, you know, hey, well, Harper, obviously, you know, McCutcheon, now this ridiculous, you know, Cespedes thing coming in as the NL MVP. But, you know, if I'm in the meeting, I'll mention Arenado, and they go, oh, yeah, well, of course. I mean, he has to be not really in the discussion because the Rockies are so bad, but everybody's starting to realize just how he is at national level. Like, you know, people, when you mention his name, people just go, oh my God, that guy is just amazing. You know, Eric Karros, Frank Thomas, these guys, like, they know who he is now. And even though he plays on the Rockies and plays on a really terrible team, I think it's, he's making it impossible to forget about him. The same way that Tulo kind of did for, you know, spurts of last year. If you remember last year in, I want to say June or July, or Troy Tulowitzki was on the cover of Sports Illustrated saying, welcome back to the MVP conversation.
Yeah.
The best player in baseball, Troy Tulowitzki. You know, guys in Colorado have to go above and beyond to transcend the national media. And while ridiculous as that is, Nolan Arenado is doing that right now.
He's, I mean, Chris Chrisman put it very well. And we've said similar things on the show before in that he is a pay to watch type of athlete, which is basically the highest accolade you can give to a professional sports performer. He is worth the price of admission. And when the Rockies don't have a lot that's worth the price of admission to look back on a franchise history, they've always had one or two of those guys. I mean, Larry Walker was always that. Todd Helton for much of his career was that. Tulo was always that when he was healthy. And Nolan is that now. And the thing I really like about Nolan is that he's been able to stay on a pretty even plane in this freakish second half that he's had, even when he's struggled a bit. And I'll tell you what I mean. August was a phenomenal month, obviously, for Nolan Arenado, but it came on the heels of a brutal July. In that month, in 92 at-bats, he batted just .228, had a .668 OPS. The next lowest OPS mark that Nolan Arenado had in any month this season was .865, and that was back in April. Only had one home run, only drove in 10. But he bounced back from that to post a line in August of 269, 304, 463, 767 OPS, and 5 homers, 17 driven in, and then obviously he's just gone off in September so far. 11 games, 8 homers, 13 RBIs, a 1502 OPS. I like that a kid who is still 24 years old, by the way, knows how to bounce back from that, because we've even seen guys who have gotten off to hot starts in their major league careers who don't sustain it after those first couple of really good seasons. And sometimes it's all it takes is one bad stretch, one bad month to turn a guy into mentally and physically a different player than what you saw from him when he was at his best. But I like that Nolan has the perfect mentality in being a guy who doesn't let things stick with him for long. I think that's what I've been able to garner about Nolan over these last couple of seasons, is that when an at-bat is done, it's done. When a game is done, it's done. Now, losing streaks and those sorts of things are going to get a guy like that frustrated, because he wants to win. He wants to be a part of a contender. But damn it, is he fun to watch, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing with baseball. You kind of have to be that, because obviously, as we all know who listen to this podcast, if you're baseball fans, that baseball is a game that is only predicated on failure. You fail 7 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer. So to be able to have that mindset and be able to brush things off as easily as Nolan has done this season, it's something that you can look forward to and say, okay, this is great. Because after the amazing first half that he had made the All-Star team, you know, he struggled really to begin for the first 6 weeks of the second half. And you go, okay, well, maybe his numbers are going to normalize the way that we kind of assume they would, like they were last year. Clearly, the power has increased by a lot this year. But you look at the, you know, maybe the OPS, the average, the OBP, it'll probably normalize to kind of where he was last year, which is, you know, OBP just over 300, you know, average 260 to 270, something like that. But to see him bounce back in September the way that he has, as loudly as he has in September, I mean, these are the months that you build on for the rest of your career that kind of show you what kind of a superstar player that Nolan Arenado can be. I mean, you don't look at a guy like that and go, oh yeah, well, you know, this guy's going to be like an MVP candidate consistently. When you saw him last year, you go, oh, he's going to be a really nice player for a while. But he has completely changed his game the entire season. I mean, the fact that last year he was somewhat of a Coors creation. You look at the numbers from last season, 16 of his 18 home runs were at Coors Field last year. OPS of 928 at home compared to 713 on the road. You go, okay, well, you know, overall, he's going to put up pretty good numbers, but, you know, he's going to be a home, like a Coors Field guy, which is okay. The Rockies play half their games at Coors Field. If you're producing as an elite player for half those games, you're going to be okay on the road. That's great. You could be that player, be a nice player with the defense that he provides. You go, okay, well, he's an all-star player just because of that, his defense. But this year, to be able to come out this season and transform himself into the guy who's leading the National League in home runs hit on the road this year.
Todd Frazier, you're talking about Todd Frazier?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Todd Frazier. The 971 OPS at home is still obviously phenomenal, better than it was last year. 18 home runs at home this year in 69 games. The OPS on the road this year, he's bumped it up over 120 points. It's at 839 right now, and 20 home runs in 67 games on the road this year. Maybe not getting on base as much. The average is well down. The OBP is well down on the road, but the power is still there. And you see that guy and you go, okay, well, he's not a Coors creation. So there goes one narrative that the national public is going to have about Nolan Arenado. That's out the window now. Now we can focus on what he does well. And I think, like I said, I think people are really, really believing and understanding just how good Nolan Arenado is, because he's forcing himself in the conversation of the 10 best players in all of baseball, if he's not even there already.
It's pretty amazing, too, because when Nolan came up, when he was coming through the minor leagues, he was a bat-first prospect.
And yes, the defense was the knock on him.
Yeah, that was always the thing, was not sure if he has the glove to stick there. You know, it remains to be seen whether he's a major league caliber or a third baseman. And now what Nolan is more known for are these freakish, jaw-dropping highlight reel plays defensively. And I think that's what kind of got him in the conversation. Then people started looking at the numbers, and then he starts following it up with how good he has been, not only, you know, in getting an All-Star nod, but throughout the entirety of this season. Since the All-Star break, Nolan's hitting .279, .875 OPS. He's got 14 of his 24 homers. I mean, he's been no slouch since the All-Star break. It was a better first half, but compared to what Todd Frazier has done, Todd Frazier in the first half batted .284 and .922 OPS with 25 homers since a .224 average, a .664 OPS, and 7 homers. He's been awful in the second half. So yeah. You look at Nolan being able to spread that out over the entirety of the season, and again, he put himself on the front page with those defensive plays. And then I think everybody started taking a closer look at who he is as a player, and he's unbelievable. And what he and Cargo have been doing over this last month or so has really been, I mean, as rare to watch as anything that you'll see on a baseball field. Two guys who are out of their minds like this at the same time on the same team. It's been pretty incredible.
And you want to know what's funny? What I like about this is that he hasn't really changed his approach too much, it would appear. Last year, average at .287. This year, it's at .288. Last year, OBP, .328. This year, .324. Those are almost the exact same numbers with he's played 25 more games this year than he did last year. You know, he was out with a hand injury for a while there. But what's the biggest difference is a nearly 100% or 100-point climb in slugging percentage. He's at .583 this year compared to an even .500 last year. So you give him more at-bats, the extra base hits are coming at a much, much higher rate than they did all last year. Obviously, as evidenced by the 38 home runs being one of them. That is obviously career high. It's 20 more than he hit all of last year, with 35 doubles as well. So the average may not be higher. The OBP is about the same. His plate discipline is really pretty much about the same as it was last year. But he's hitting more extra base hits, maybe swinging for the fences a couple more times, but he's not without changing how he attacks opposing pitchers. And I think that's a very important thing to look at as well. You can probably get deeper into it looking at his O contact percentage, his O swing percentage, and probably find something in there. But just looking at that straight, just the slash lines, you can see that the only difference there is the giant leap in slugging percentage. And it's from year to year. In 2013, he slugged .405. Last year, slugged .500. This year, slugging .583. That has been a large, large increase in slugging percentage every year, while the average and OBP have pretty much stayed static over the 3+ years he's been in the big leagues now.
It's just, again, it's the highest compliment that you can pay a guy who you would pay to watch, and that's Nolan right now. And he gives you the cornerstone that you want to build around going forward. That Todd and the Toddlers nonsense of the mid-2000s, which ended up working out, getting the Rockies a playoff berth in 2007, a World Series berth, and then a playoff berth in 2009, that worked. But it was different in that Todd was already in such a later stage of his career. Now, you look at Nolan, and the thing that you can build around with Nolan is the fact that you've got him under team control for a while. If you want to lock him up for longer than that, you have that option. I mean, obviously, the Rockies have seen there are some drawbacks to signing guys to huge deals like this. But he's 24 years old. There is so much of Nolan's best baseball ahead of him, and that is unbelievable. Today, Buster only tweeted out, and you retweeted this from the PDP account. I had not seen it, but he said, quote, "Longtime evaluator on Nolan Arenado," and this is at evaluator's quote, "he's the best third baseman I've ever seen. Roland, Brooks, Beltre, better than all of them." That's not like some, Denver media, some hack, blah, blah, blah. That's Buster only talking to a player evaluator in a major league organization who says that.
That's so unbelievable.
The word is out. The word is out on Nolan.
It is. And it's going to be fun to watch, him going forward. I mean, and what do the Rockies do with him in the offseason? And that's a big question as well. We saw what the Rockies did with guys like Cargo and Troy Tulowitzki, and even Todd Helton when he was a young kid. They signed to big, long-term deals to keep them in Denver, and really, not many of them have worked out to the end of the contract. But, understandably, you need to be able to sign these guys if you can to keep them there, keep them happy. Obviously, Nolan was not happy about the trade of Tulo because they were very close, and he doesn't like playing for a losing team. We get that. But you have to wonder if this offseason they may try to buy out some of Nolan's arbitration years and get him to a long-term contract to keep him in Denver at least, maybe till he turns 30. I would say, maybe sign him like if you can get him to like a 5-year deal. So even if it doesn't work out and the Rockies aren't contending by 2020 or something like that, then he'll still be a free agent before he turns 30. So I think if the Rockies want to –
That's ridiculous.
Exactly. If the Rockies want to do it that way, the same way that the Angels did with Mike Trout, to some extent, of course, if they want to do it that way, so they can say, like, well, Nolan, we want you here. We want to pay you. We can set you for life. And if we're not contending by the time this contract is up and you're fed up with us, then you can look for somewhere else. You'll still be well within your prime to get another big contract. And so it could work out for both parties.
Now, let's talk about one Carlos Gonzalez, because this basically the entire topic that we had set out for this was Ask PDP and talking Nolan and Cargo. So that's pretty much it.
What else?
Cargo, exactly. It's not like they're winning. Cargo has been a freak since the All-Star break. A 293 average, a 1088 OPS, 24 home runs, 52 runs batted in, and is making himself as valuable now as he has been in his career. Now, two-pronged question. One, is this as good of a stretch from Cargo as we've ever seen? I mean, for so long, you and I had to talk people off the ledge with, back when it was, well, who's going to get traded as a Tulo or Cargo? And we always said, you know, they're both starting slow. They're both going to be there. They're both going to be as good as they've ever been. And Tulo came along a little bit quicker than Cargo did, but then Cargo had that July in which he batted 386, OPS 1278. Is this as good as we've ever seen Cargo? One. And two, now what does this look like for him? I mean, is he going to be this team's starting right fielder when it comes to opening day 2016?
I mean, it's been 3.5 months that he has been arguably the best home run hitter in baseball.
Out of his mind. Yeah.
Just out of his mind. It's been 3.5 months. It's been since basically June 1st when he entered that on 4 home runs, and now he's got 37. I mean,
it's insane.
And it's funny, you look at it, Cargo, of course, has dealt with a lot of injuries over the last couple of seasons, but he's played 132 games this year. I also want to point out that people are saying, like, oh, you know, when Tulo comes to Denver next year, like, oh, he could probably going to be hurt by then. Tulo's played every game this year, you guys, pretty much. He hasn't missed any extended time. He's missed games here and there, just regular rest. He's been healthy the entire season. Cargo the same, 130 games, 132 games now for Carlos Gonzalez this year. And you look at the numbers that Cargo has put up when he's been healthy in his career. Every year that he's played at least 125 games, he's had an OPS of at least 889. How about that? That's what it is exactly right now. Through 132 games, 889 OPS. In 2012, he played 135 games. Or sorry, 880 at least. 881 in 2012. 889 when he played 127 games in 2011. And then 2010, 974 in 145 games. When Cargo is healthy, which he hasn't been for the last 2 years, these are the numbers that he puts up. Now, the run that he's been on is obviously something that has been unprecedented in his career before. He's already 3 over his career high in home runs. But when Cargo's healthy, he's still clearly one of the best pure hitters in the game, if not one of the best home run hitters we're seeing right now.
And that bat drop. Man,
I mean, that bat drop, though.
It's like the only thing, you know. It's the only thing you need to know about Cargo. If you didn't know anything about Carlos Gonzalez and you just showed somebody a video of him hitting a 430-foot home run and dropping the bat the way he does, you would understand everything about baseball and life and probably, you know, what is beyond this mortal coil. That's all you need.
So here's a number that I got. So Carlos Gonzalez has hit 24 home runs since the All-Star break in 50 games. The Rockies' record for home runs after the All-Star break is 27 by Dante Bichette in 1995.
Wow.
And that was in 72 games. Andrés Galarraga hit 25 after the All-Star break in 1996. That was in 76 games. Right now, Larry Walker in 97, his MVP year, in 69 games after the break, also hit 24 home runs. So Cargo right now is 3 away from tying the record for it, from setting the record for home runs after the All-Star break for a Rocky. And he's done so in 20 fewer games than those guys yet.
It's just unbelievable. I mean, the way that these two guys have been is you rarely see anything like this in sports.
Yeah.
You rarely see it from one guy, especially on a non-contending team just playing out the string toward the end of a season. But for both these guys to be doing it simultaneously, it almost makes you wonder how the Rockies haven't been able to get on a little roll.
Yeah.
almost makes you feel like maybe they should have been better in the second half.
Because they're starting Johan Flandy and Chris Russon two times every 5 days.
Yeah, they're not real good at the baseball.
I also want to point out that in Tulo's 2010 year, when he was awesome and he hit 15 home runs in September, going into September of that year, he had only had 3 home runs after the All-Star break.
Jeez.
And then he hit 15 in September.
I'm going to miss that guy. I already miss that guy, but
yeah.
Miss that guy. When he's playing playoff games this year, it's going to be a real bummer.
But it's going to be awesome.
I mean, it'll
him.
Be awesome for him, but it'll be
it'll
a
be
real
awesome
bummer
for him.
Watch
yeah.
him having fun with other teams. By the way, the Rockies, even though they have sucked, they're not sucking nearly enough because they are now 4 games back in the win column of the Philadelphia Phillies, who are already assured of a very sub 500 season at 54-87. The Rockies, who are now assured of a sub 500 season, are 58-82. The good news is they're only 23.5 games back in the wild card. Bad news is their elimination number is down to 1. So I don't think they're going to make it, but you know, there's no point in sucking this much if you're not going to get the first pick in the draft.
Nope.
So might
it's
as
amazing.
Well go for it.
That like it's amazing how bad the National League is and how top heavy it is. It's amazing because the 3 teams that are on the top, the Cardinals, Pirates, and Cubs, all in the same division, and they're basically the 3 best teams in the National League, which sucks for them because they have to play each other to get into the actual playoffs. But how top-heavy is the National League that the Marlins, who are 59-81, are 3rd in the National League East? Like, they're 22 games under 500, and they're 3rd in their own division.
They are exactly 1 game ahead of the Rockies in the wild card standings at 59-81, 22.5 back. Rockies are 23.5 back. Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from the positive side, the Rockies would be chasing 3rd place in the NL East.
Yeah.
You know,
oh God.
It's a good thing. It's
so depressing.
And they'd be just barely behind the Cincinnati Reds for last place in the Central. I tweeted this out a couple weeks ago from the PDP account. It still holds true. The Chicago Cubs right now would be leading 4 other divisions in baseball. They're the 3rd place team in the National League Central at 81-58, and they would be leading the American League East, the American League West, the National League East, and the National League West.
They're the 3rd best team in the National League.
Yeah.
They're not in just the Central.
Yeah,
the
there's
National
3
League.
Teams that are at the top of the National League. They're all in the Central.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's Cardinals, Pirates, Cubs, Doyer.
Just, I want to point out one thing that I noticed on the old baseball reference page for team or player value leaders in war this year. And let me just, of the top 10 guys, let's say, in all of the National League, Anthony, how many of those guys do you think were acquired by their current major league clubs via the draft? Because as we've been told, the draft and developing players is a scam, according to the only newspaper in town and their most prominent columnist. Drafting and developing players is a scam. Now tell me how the top 10 of the top 10 players in the National League in war, how many do you think were acquired via the draft?
Bryce Harper's got to be there.
Yep.
Acquired via the draft. Paul Goldschmidt.
Yep.
Acquired via the draft. Andrew McCutchen.
Yep.
Acquired via the draft. Nolan Arenado.
Right.
Acquired via the draft.
It's 4.
Okay.
Let me roll through some of these names. Yeah. Out of the top 10, here are the guys who have been drafted by their teams and are currently in the top 10 in war, which, again, the people who are talking about how it's a scam don't understand what war is either, but just we'll put that aside for the moment.
What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing. Huh! Bryce Harper, number 1. A war of 9 even this year. Paul Goldschmidt, number 2. 7.4 is his war rating. Joey Votto, 3rd with
Votto,
a 7
yeah.
even. He was an amateur draft acquisition. Anthony Rizzo is 4th.
He was traded.
He was traded from the Boston Red Sox organization where he was originally drafted.
Yeah.
AJ Pollock, 5th, drafted.
Yeah.
Buster Posey, 6th, drafted. Nolan Arenado, 7th, drafted. Brandon Crawford, 8th, drafted. Curtis Granderson is 9th, a free agent pickup.
Interesting.
And Andrew McCutchen, 10th, drafted.
Pretty
so
good.
Of those guys, one of them was a free agent signing. In the top 20, 2 of them have been free agent signings, and one of those doesn't even really count because it's Jung Ho Gang of the Pittsburgh Pirates, who was signed from Korea, not a major league free agent acquisition. So, just saying, it's all a big scam. But anyway, that's where you have it. You want to do a little Ask PDP?
Let's do a little Ask PDP.
Let's
yeah.
do it. Let's fire
Let's
away.
Let's do a little Ask PDP.
I love some Ask PDP. Where should we dive in? We got a lot of really good questions. The questions that I love most are the non-baseball questions, especially at this time of the year. But let's dive into a baseball and a non-baseball question. from one of our very loyal pals, Josh, who's at J_MoneyOKC, although he's wearing a Texas shirt in his Twitter photo, and that I hate. But Josh says this: visiting Coors for the first time next Saturday. The last Rockies game I was at was at Mile High. What should I do and see? And I like that question a lot. It's all going to revolve around food for me. So, Josh, your number one stop should be the Cherry Cricket.
Okay.
Because burgers, food, the mac and cheese bites, whatever. By the way, I'm on like a trying to – my sister had a baby like a year and a half ago and was like, we should go on a diet, like motivate each other, you know. Like, sure. She's thinking about having another kid and she wanted somebody to be like, no, you can do it. You can stick to – so I'm on this diet where I'm just eating nothing but like fruits and veggies and meat, and it makes me want to kill myself thinking about good food because I can't have it. But that would be my number one stop. Number two, there's just so much cool stuff to do in Lodo. Like, yeah. If you just wandered around Lodo on a Saturday morning, early Saturday afternoon ahead of a game, you'll find so much fun stuff to do. There's Mile High Spirits down there, which brews all of its own booze now. They got good vodkas and good bourbons and good whiskeys and all that kind of stuff. There is a very cool place called Ophelia's, I believe it's called, which used to be like a brothel and a porn store.
Ophelia.
Yeah. That's yeah. What, they just play that when you walk in.
Tell me what went wrong.
But that place is awesome. That's on Blake Street, and I think or on 20th and like Arapahoe. But your number one game day stop should be the National Ballpark Museum on 20th and Blake. It's Catty Corner or Kitty Corner or Catty Wampus, depending on how weird you are.
How really weird you are.
From Coors Field.
You're weird.
Have you heard Catty Wampus before?
That's I have, weirdest. But then I've decided I'm never going to talk to those people ever again.
Which is a correct decision. Yeah. But the National Ballpark Museum, Bruce Hellerstein runs it, basically is a guy who has acquired a phenomenal amount of awesome old ballpark artifacts from the original greatest early ballparks of the ballpark golden era, you know, the Tiger Stadiums and the Crosley Fields and the original Yankee Stadiums and Fenway and Ebbets Field and the Polo Grounds. He's got all that stuff. So it's basically diagonally across from Coors Field. Coming to Denver for a game day, stop by there. My favorite part of that museum is the Denver baseball section, which is just to the left when you walk in. That part's actually free, but I think admission for the museum is $5. Best $5.
Ain't taking my money.
You're such a cheapo.
Well, I mean, okay. You obviously live in Denver, so I'll let you answer that one most of the time. But my favorite restaurant for just good Denver eats is Biker Jim's. Love me.
Yeah,
Biker
Jim's is a good one.
Every time I go to Denver, I go to Biker Jim's first. It's right by Coors Field now. It used to be just the cart. Now it's got the full restaurant. All the beers you want, all the crazy sausages you want. I'm totally down.
That's solid. It's a good pick as well. All right. Second Ask PDP question. Fire away.
From our buddy Dan Lucero at Dan Lucero Show. Best feel-good emergence of 2015. Ben Paulson, Chris Russin, or hashtag Rockies Twitter.
Well, it's feel good, so it obviously can't be Rocky's Twitter because everybody's just dicks to each other lately.
Pretty much.
No, Rocky's Twitter is that we're a great little family because we're all just bastards to each other from time to time. And then we're all just like, it's a love fest from time to time as well.
We're like a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like the Royal Tenenbaums.
Exactly.
There's a lot of things that have happened in our past, so we're not really all letting go of at the same time.
Right.
But, you know, at the end of the day, we can all sit down and have a meal.
That's a big thing, man. That's a big thing to be able to overcome with your friends and family.
Yeah.
So let's vote Rocky's Twitter. But I will say that of all the Rockies feel-good stories this year, one of them that, you know, I don't know how long it'll last, but Dustin Garneau is turned into a really cool story because this is a kid who was drafted a long time ago, 2009, which does not seem like that long ago, but Dustin Garneau has slogged through a whole lot of minor league crap to get to where he is. Seven seasons in the minors, started things off at rookie level Casper, short season Class A Tri-City the next year, then Modesto, then he was in Asheville in 2011, then Modesto again in 2012, and 2013 in Tulsa, had an AFL stint back in Tulsa in 2014, Colorado Springs a little bit in 2014. I just like seeing a guy who makes that entire climb. That's been really cool. And his family seems awesome. I mean, when they've been on TV, they've seemed super cool and hits his first major league home run. I like Dustin Garneau. Seems like a cool story.
Yeah, I like Justin Miller as well, what we've seen so far.
Yeah.
You know, guy coming to the Rockies. And
that's a good one.
Got a fielding independent pitching of just over 2 right now, obviously. He has just set the Rockies record for most consecutive strikeouts at 7. That is still an active streak as well. But 29 punchouts and 24 and a third. I like what he's seen from him too. Like, he's been a nice little find so far for the Rockies, and a guy that really is pitching himself into the bullpen for next year.
Just looking over the, I just got lost looking at the amount of pitchers the Rockies have actually used this year.
It's been a lot.
11 right. different starting pitchers.
Next question from
10, actually 10.
Or for a good buddy, Jack Hayer.
Yeah.
Our government houses now banking centers or bureau de charge for storing for it. Oh, that's
Am
the other
right?
SPDP.
Am I right?
Sorry,
Jack?
That's the other SPDP, Jack. He did have a real question though.
By the way, Jack found the actual account that the other Ask PDP is for, and it's at PDP Nigeria, which apparently stands for the People's Democratic Party.
That's awesome.
Their slogan is "Power to the People" is not a mere slogan; it's a reality.
Do you think that sometimes they get cross-referenced with our tweets and are like, "What the hell are these idiots talking about?"
This is what's so weird to me is that, like, this is a verified account. This is like a legit account. They have 79,000 followers. They've tweeted 3,506 times, but they haven't tweeted since May.
Weird.
So that's very strange. I don't know. They did have an election. Good Luck Jonathan got voted out of power. I actually know these things about Nigerian politics. I listen to NPR a lot.
Is it because we follow AskPDP on Twitter?
People were going to the polls that day and were like, oh, God, what are all these baseball questions?
Right?
Well, I'm not voting for the PDP.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I honestly think that was
Is Kyle Parker on the ballot? I'll see all these quotes about Kyle Parker and free Kyle Parker. He must be something that the PDP Nigeria is really going
Kyle
in on.
Kyle Parker was a political prisoner of the Rocky system. I think Good Luck Jonathan actually was a member of the he was a member of the People's Democratic Party and then was voted out, and now we know. Huh.
The more you know. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, Jack had a real question though.
Okay.
Where do you see some of the Rockies' top prospects starting next season?
Yeah, I like this question.
Dahl, Tapia, and Rogers.
I think let me start with the two easier ones. David Dahl, to me, is going to Albuquerque. I think the Rockies were very aggressive with how they treated David Dahl after the surgery. Kind of threw him right back into the fire, which I like. And he held his own. And I think that is spleenless. Probably what speaks most, the spleenless David Dahl. Raimel Tapia is headed for Hartford, not New Britain. He'll go to Hartford next year, and I think the Rockies are going to be a little bit more open to the possibility of a midseason promotion with Tapia next year.
Yeah,
I don't have that on any authority, but yeah, they've been slow with that. And
very
he just
station to station.
Just continues to showcase his power and his ability to do everything at the plate. One guy who I want to note who's not in that question, but I want to give some props to, Ryan McMahon today. The Rockies' third base prospect and number 5 overall prospect was named to MLB Pipeline's Prospect Team of the Year. Spent the entire season Class A Advanced Modesto. He'll go to Hartford next year and be one of the yard goats in their inaugural season. 132 games, slash line of 300, 372, 520. And if you think, like, oh, that seems low for the Cal League, Modesto is the least hitter-friendly ballpark in the California League.
Yeah.
So that's pretty damn good. He led the league with 43 doubles and checked in the top 10 in basically every other offensive category. He hit 15 of his 18 home runs on the road, so congrats to him. As for Brendan Rodgers, that is going to be a very interesting assignment next year. I don't think that he is headed for full season ball.
I don't think so either. Yeah.
I think there is a very good chance that Brendan Rodgers goes back to Grand Junction. And I don't mean that as a knock on him. I mean it
He's going to be, 14 years old next year?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's 18. He doesn't turn 19 until August 9th of next year. So he was 17 when he was drafted. Is that right? No. No, that's not right. He turned 19 this year. He turns 20 next year. So he was 18 when he was drafted.
Do math, man.
I don't like – that's why I majored in broadcasting.
Yeah.
He's 18 when he was drafted, but he goes to the Pioneer – and he did finish very strong. He finished on a very good note. He finishes the season with a 373 average, a 759 OPS. He homered 3 times, including once in his debut. But he only played 37 games. And the Rockies were very, very cautious with Brendan Rodgers. And I think for my money – I think what they're going to do is get him into a regular everyday routine in a place where they can very closely monitor him, like Grand Junction, which is what they like to do. The Montforts own that club. They like to have their highest, youngest assets stationed there. John Gray went there. Eddie Butler went there. David Dahl went there. All those guys. I think they'll put him there. And if Brendan Rodgers really blows up at the start of the 2016 season, then I think he goes to Asheville. I think he'll skip Boise, which I know Boise fans are a little bit upset about because that's vastly different from the way the Cubs treated that market. But I think that's the way that it'll go for Rogers next year.
I think so, too. I think I agree with that for the most part. I would not be surprised if the Rockies begin David Dahl next year in Hartford.
Yeah, I can see that, too.
Because the injuries he had this year, obviously the spleen being removed, the knee injury that ended his season prematurely. If he isn't able to play in the Arizona Fall League to his full extent, I would not be surprised to see him start next year with the Yard Goats.
That'd be sexy, too.
Yeah, that'd be a hell of a team.
Seeing Dahl and the Yard Goats.
Dahl, Tapia, McMahon, Patterson, all those guys up there.
All right. Next SPDP. Next ask.
You majored
question.
In broadcasting.
I have. Hey, I hired you for a broadcasting job, jerk.
Yes, you did.
Oh. Let's go to this one from Rockspile. Our good pals over at Rockspile. If you could expand Major League Baseball, where are your top three or four new cities? And then a parenthetical that says "say Charlotte" twice. I'm going to let you take this, and then I'm going to take it, I think, in a different mold than the traditional answer, but go.
So what is so if we're going to expand Major League Baseball?
Expansion franchises, top three or four new cities, go.
I would say Portland is one because I always used to love seeing the old Beavers Stadium.
Which is now a soccer facility.
Yes. Where, like, basically left field was just built into the street, and, like, the top of the left field stands, which is basically a giant, like, rock monster, was just
rock monster.
The street. Was just the street, and I always loved that. And Portland, they loved the Beavers when they were there, their AAA affiliate at the time. But I think, if I remember correctly, the city of Portland was given an ultimatum. Either you take the Beavers or you take the Timbers, which is the Major League Soccer team.
Right.
And they decided to go the Major League Soccer route, which is understandable. It's a good market for that up there. I think Portland would be one, but I'm not sure they could get enough people there to support a Major League team. Obviously, I get that.
Yeah.
I get that aspect of it. I was thinking it was a cool minor league town, maybe not a Major League town.
They've lost several minor league franchises.
Yes.
So, yeah.
That was my only rationale for wanting that, by the way. It was just because the ballpark used to be really cool. I mean, I could totally see Charlotte. I mean, we saw how big a deal baseball is in the South, and really their only team besides, like, the Florida teams, which don't count, is the Braves. And if they had competition there, I think that'd be fun. But at the same time, we know this very, very well, that while people in the South like their baseball, they don't care about professional sports.
Right.
So I think diluting that with another team in that same area as where the Braves have their market, I don't think it would get a lot of people around there to go to those games consistently enough.
That'd be my argument against Charlotte is, like, sports fans in the South suck when it comes to professional sports. Like,
college sports are the best. They're the craziest.
Right. Think about what you know about the Carolina Panthers or the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing. You know why? Because people in that city don't know anything about them. They're awful fans. So... sorry, Bobby. I would assume that this probably had something to do with, like, a column or something on Rockspile. I haven't looked today, but Charlotte seemed like such a random pick.
I mean, the easy answer is Montreal.
Definitely.
I think easy answer Montreal. I think a lot of people are wanting to see that happen again when, it was kind of yanked away from them. But at the same time, it was a lot of, bad things going on with that team. Definitely. The attendance had really dropped. The ballpark wasn't great. But I think maybe enough time has passed that we could see that the groundswell is definitely becoming a lot louder. I could see that. But in terms of other giant markets in the United States that should have a major league team.
Yeah, there aren't many. There aren't. I mean, I think San Antonio would be interesting because they've definitely shown that they have the ability to embrace major league games. They played major league games there, exhibition games. The Rangers and the Astros have played there at the Alamo Dome, and it's been weird and cool.
New Orleans?
Yeah, New Orleans I think would be really cool too. They don't have the greatest support for the Zephyrs, but that's due a lot to the ballpark's location more than anything. And there are some other AAA markets that I think could be good.
Memphis.
I think Portland could be good. Memphis could be good. Indianapolis could be good. Those types of places. But I agree. Montreal, I think Montreal did not lose a team because of fan apathy. Montreal lost a team because the organization was terribly run and the fans stood up. And that's what everybody said. Oh, we need to boycott the Montforts, whatever. Yeah, boycotts did a whole hell of a lot of good for Expos fans.
Yeah.
You know, ask Jonah Carey how good it works.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna go a different route. My top city for Major League Baseball expansion, Mexico City.
I'm listening.
It works. They've got a very successful domestic league. It's a very large city. They have, it's a country that has a lot of economic assets that are on the upturn. It's not like putting a team in Tijuana in the 80s. It would be a very viable thing to do.
Or Veracruz right now.
Right, exactly. It'd be a very viable thing to do. It'll never happen because there are so many complications with it politically and from the ownership standpoint, but I really think that'd be very cool. I mean, major league franchises in every sport have been more than open to expanding into Canada. Why not Mexico? Mexico City is not some third world city. You're not going to the moon, you know, like I think it'd be a very cool idea. And my other two cities that I think would work best, one is San Juan, Puerto Rico. We've seen that worked, obviously, when the Expos
were there.
They played like half their season there one
at Huron Beathorn, yeah.
And Havana, Cuba. If the embargo is ever lifted, I don't think a major league team would ever go there, but I think it would be fascinating to put an international league team there again. People don't really realize that Havana had a team in the minor leagues until the 60s.
Yeah.
And was a very good baseball market. Teams used to play spring training, hold spring training down there. There's a whole lot of baseball infrastructure there that would obviously need to be upgraded, but I think that'd be a really cool place to expand too. So no, I don't really, you know, I don't think it's any of those are logical.
No.
But you know, if you had to look at the most realistic, it's probably something like Portland or Charlotte or Montreal.
The other one I would say is Vancouver.
Yeah, Vancouver would be cool too.
Yeah, if they're gonna do Montreal, they could think about Vancouver as well.
Be cool.
That's a good question though.
All right. Ask PDP continues. Oliver Howard.
Let's do a few more. Yeah,
let's do a few more. Oliver Howard sent in a whole lot of good questions. My favorite one from him is, what is your favorite Calvin and Hobbes story arc? And that is like that's one of my favorite questions that anybody has ever asked me in my entire life, to be perfectly honest. I love it. I very much enjoy Calvin's eternal battle with his father and how he doesn't ever want to do anything. And his father just says, it'll build character. That's one of my favorite things because I saw myself as Calvin as a kid. And now I see myself eventually one day, if I'm a father, of just being that guy who's a pain in the ass to his kid. Just do this. It'll build character.
Yeah.
So I like that. But Oliver also asked a couple of other good ones. He says Dockies, which I assume was intentional because it sounds funny. Why do us Dockies fans do this to ourselves? That's number one. And number two, which I think goes hand in hand with that, what's your favorite new cocktail?
New cocktail? I'm a Manhattan guy.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm definitely a Manhattan guy.
I'm an old-fashioned man.
Okay, I like those.
I like old-fashions because if you go to a really cool hipster bar, they serve them over those giant blocks of ice. They don't even give you ice cubes. They just give you that one giant cube of ice, that big, huge block. I like that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that goes very hand-in-hand with why do we do this to ourselves. It's so we can discover new cocktails. Next question.
All right. Oliver had another good one, too.
Yeah.
Well, I look like a fool for telling everyone to wait for the Rockies of 2017. I'm pretty high on what 2017 will be.
I don't think so. I don't think you're going to be a fool for that, Oliver. It's very difficult to try to still, you know, be the birthday party clown that spits out candy when you punch it in the gut, because that's kind of what Rockies fans have turned into to try to keep being positive. But I don't see anything that suggests reasons for being less optimistic about the future. The only thing that to me, I mean, when you look at the Rockies for 2016 and 2017 and beyond, the plan for developing young talent has gotten much better. I mean, it's gotten very enhanced with the additions of the guys from the Tulo trade, obviously, and the steps forward that a lot of prospects have taken. Tommy Murphy's up. He's going to make his major league debut tonight. So I don't see anything bad about that. So, no, I don't think – I mean, right now you look like a fool, but that's why you do it. Because in 2017, you get to talk to everybody who made fun of you, and you get to flip them off to their faces. And that's glorious. That's the best part about being a Rockies fan.
They're going to say, like, oh, well, I've been there the whole time. I knew Breidich's plan was going to work. No, you didn't.
No, you didn't. You're an idiot. You're an idiot.
You're a damned liar.
Morons.
This one you can probably answer pretty well, Tyler, from Lolly at LollyBell01. Are the Rockies sending anyone to play in the ABL this winter, or when will it be announced?
That will be announced coming up in the next few weeks. Minor league seasons are done. Regular seasons are done. Playoffs are currently underway. I already know a handful of imports who are headed over to the ABL this year. I don't know of any Rockies guys. The Rockies actually sent a couple of guys. The organization sent them two seasons ago, Ryan Castile and Tyler Massey, who were both with the Melbourne Aces, were a couple of seasons ago. Ryan was in AAA this year, and Tyler was in AA. But Joey Wong went over kind of his own accord last season and the season before. He played with Perth. And there are a couple of Rockies prospects who are Australian guys. Robbie Perkins is a catcher for the Canberra Cavalry. I don't know if the Rockies are sending guys over this year yet, but we will have that announcement in the next few weeks, so be on the lookout for it.
Cool.
This is one of my favorite questions of the week. Ask PDP, is Connor, who has never once been owned, the best tweeter online? That's from at Rockies versus Connor. Now, here's the thing. I have heard through various channels that Connor has been owned.
Yeah,
specifically by Mark Summers.
That's what I heard. Nickelodeon game show host Mark Summers.
Just what I heard.
So, yeah, I was wondering that same thing. I've heard the ownage has at least happened once.
See, and that's what's so weird.
To Mr. Connor.
Because he says that he has never once been owned. That's what he says in his own tweet.
Yeah, I don't see that being true. But
very strange. You
know. All right, one more.
For my money, I say yes, best tweeter online. I love that kid. He cracks me up.
One more. You got it, Tyler.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we have one more.
Do we not have one more?
From at Jeff Norwood 43. Do we have to wait 4 years to vote him out? Ask PDP shit. Wrong. Ask PDP. Sorry.
From Prince Will at Uncle Prince. When corruption fights back, it fights dirty. # ask PDP at PDP Nigeria.
Also, I love how Jack Hare just copied and pasted a question from Abdul Jajeri from September 5th. Our government house is now banking centers or bureau to change for storing Forex. And the other thing is that even though that PDP account went dark in May, people are still tweeting questions.
I know.
Which is very strange. Get off my lawn, other Ask PDP people.
All right, that's good.
All right, I think that's all.
Also, I want to point out, we never actually said who we were naming this PDP episode after.
Oh, I just figured we all assumed it was like Wilton Lopez.
We can do Wilton Lopez.
Like Wilton Lopez, we never closed that out, did we?
Hey.
Oh, we should probably end on that.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one to end on.
Hey, send us your questions, thoughts, comments, concerns, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. You can get in touch with the show there or on Twitter at @PurpleDinoCast. Anthony is at Master Tones. I am at Tyler Mon. And Purple Row is at Purple Row. They, as well as ESPN Denver, do us the good deed of hosting the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. You can check out PDP t-shirts if you're new to the show and you need to purchase one, or Christmas is like 4 months away. Get your shopping done early. That's at humblemonster.com. And until next week, just send us some music, for God's sake. Send us some music.
Get off your ass and send us music.
Come on, you jerk.
For this free podcast that you probably kind of enjoy.
Good Lord. It's unbelievable. I guess that's all. All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. We're recording today. This is September 11th. I have not really seen... There's normally just a rash of dumb brands on, like, 9/11 or, like, that Seahawks tweet on MLK Day. I haven't really seen that.
No, not really.
There's been a couple, I'm sure. Yeah. But I haven't seen any, like, just stupid 9/11.
I haven't seen
tweets.
A lot of, like, really, really annoying 9/11 shit today, which I assume I always am going to see.
I was going to say, have you been on Facebook? Because I would assume that's where it all is.
Nope. Haven't been on Facebook.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah.
These colors don't run.
No.
Or something.
Or something. What does that even mean?
I don't know. Who knows?
And like,
I think it's a laundry joke.
I think it is a laundry joke.
Not a joke. I think it's like a laundry comment.
Do you think like people at Tide like invented that joke? Or like, this is going to be a good one for our brand.
It does seem like a very strange thing to commemorate the worst tragedy in American history, right? Like, it seems like a very weird thing to tie that to laundry.
Yeah. Also, I don't understand why they put the backwards flag on things.
Ah, I can explain that to you.
I know it's like these colors don't run. It's like, I get it. It's like facing whatever. It just looks like they put the flag on wrong.
Okay, now let me explain it, but I have to explain it in a way. Oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find
it. Explain it to me like I'm five.
Explain this to me like I'm a four-year-old. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find this, but it was perfectly phrased. USA Baseball tweeted something out a couple of weeks ago when the USA, the 18 and under team, was in the World Cup. And they had it phrased perfectly. And now, of course, I'm not going to be able to find it. Basically, it says the stars always lead into battle. And where it comes from is, I think, from like the cavalry back in the Civil War. A guy who was holding the flag, when he would be riding forward,
right,
the flag is flowing behind him. So when you put it on like the right, it doesn't answer the question of like, why don't you just put it on the left side of everything?
Right.
That now, doesn't answer the question. But
that's cool.
Yeah.
I figured it was something like that.
Yeah.
But you have to know that story to realize that they just didn't put it on backwards.
Yeah, that's true. That is definitely
true. Like, it's kind of an esoteric story. Like, I didn't know that story.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. No, I...
It's kind of an involved thing there, no?
I know the first time that I saw, in 2006, when I saw Team USA's World Baseball Classic uniforms, I thought they had put the flag on wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And...
Once you know, you go, oh, okay, I get it, but...
Yeah, like,
you
why
know
not,
that first.
Why not
yeah.
just put it on the left sleeve?
Yeah, whatever.
Who knows? People don't pay us to figure these things out, and I don't know why. It's ridiculous.
People don't pay us to do anything.